can we understand clearly the meaning of the words being sung? And the meaning of the words were the key to any piece's expressive message. And remember something else. We're still talking about a culture that is almost entirely a vocal culture. We will not encounter instrumental music in any considerable amount for another 200 years. So the word is the message. The word must be clear. Now we will talk about tone painting, the other key Renaissance expressive device, in due time. First, we've got to talk about the theoretical and constructive innovations of the Renaissance, tangentially tuning systems, but most importantly, this thing we call harmony. You know, a little technical stuff is good for the soul. It hardens us. It toughens us. It makes the brain expand. And I would ask you to bear with me right now for a couple of minutes. Today, if we look at a piano, for example, we see a visual illustration of our contemporary tuning system, a tuning system that we call the equal tempered system. And it is a standard, a universal standard, this tuning system. As a composer, I can write a piece of music knowing it will sound the same on any piano, providing the piano is reasonably in tune, wherever it is played on this planet. But in 1400, there were few, if any, standards. There were profound regional differences in tuning and profound variations in the kinds of pitches that we would hear. Now, a rereading and rediscovering of Pythagoras and other ancient music theorists stimulated tremendous experimentation with systems of tuning, scales, and harmony during the Renaissance. The Renaissance was likewise intrigued, of course, by the Pythagorean Greek view of music as a sonic manifestation of the order of the cosmos, that is, the doctrine of ethos, a fascination with this idea that underneath its complexity, music could be an ordered and, frankly, homogeneous thing. Among his many experiments, Pythagoras had sought to understand why certain sounds seemed to blend together, that is, why they were consonant with each other, and why other sounds seemed not to blend together, why they were dissonant with each other. Let me demonstrate this for us right now. I'm going to play four different sounds, four different pitches at the piano simultaneously. Close your eyes and ask yourselves how many different sounds you are perceiving. Again. Those sounds blend together to the point that they sound like one single sound. All right, I'll simplify things. I'll only play two different pitches now. Can we perceive the difference between these pitches? Do they blend or do they not blend? Are they consonant or dissonant with each other? I kind of like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, there's no blend at all. We would call that, and it's not a subjective designation, it's simply calling it by what it is, a dissonance, because these sounds don't seem to have much in common. Will this intrigue Pythagoras as it should intrigue us? And he sought to understand mathematically and rationally why certain sounds blend and why others would seem not to blend. So he constructed a monochord, that is a single long string, and started dividing it up in certain equal amounts. When he plucked that whole string, let us say that this is the sound that he got. So that's the big mama, the whole thing. We pluck that string, we get this sound. Now, Pythagoras said the simplest mathematical ratio in my universe, aside from 1 to 1, would be 2 to 1. Sonically, that would be the same as comparing the one, the long string, to half of the string. So he then divided the string in half, and he plucked half the string. Now, we all know what should be happening here. If we take a jump rope and we divide it in half and we spin it, it will spin twice as fast on half of its axis as it spins on its whole axis. Indeed, half the string will vibrate twice as fast as the entire string. Here is the original sound. And here's the sound he got when he plucked half of the string. And if I play them together,